And we're holding in Shabbos, page Samachtes, paragraph labeled Daf Kuf Memches Omr Aleph, middle of Ois Kuf Hei. At the end of the parak, the Mishnah mentions a few things involving taking care of the body that you are or aren't allowed to do on Shabbos. One of them is the Mishnah says you're not allowed to set broken bone. But then the Gemara brings that Shmuel said that you are allowed to. Now, Shmuel being an Amora can't argue with the Mishnah, but it means that either he had a different version of the Mishnah or he says that the Mishnah only represents a Das Yochim. Anyway, the Gemara brings in this connection, this short story. Rabbi Baba Chana Ikol the Pupadisa. Rabbi Baba Chana, who was from Eretz Yisrael, one time visited Pupadisa. Loy Ol the Pirkei de Rabbi Yehuda. He did not come to the shear of Rabbi Yehuda. Pirkei, in particular, we find in other places in Shas, is a shear that the Chacham would give on Shabbos for where we would teach practical halacha for the Olam. So Rabbi Baba Chana didn't bother coming to that. Shadre la'ada daila. So Rabbi Yehuda sent Ada daila to go and get him. Daila, Rashi translates with a French word and explains that means muna, a person in charge of things. The article explains it means that he was specifically in charge of collecting tolls. Whatever the case, he was an important person there in Pumbedisa. He was a dehoibina yid, and in a literal sense also, the Gemara tells us in Nida that he was the tallest person in his time. Anyway, the point is, Rabbi Yehuda now sent him to go and tell Rabbi Baba Chana to come. Omale zil garbe. He tells him, go garbe him, if necessary, to get him to come. Rashi translates garbe as take his clothing away from him so he'll be forced to come, almost like take a mashkin from him. The Oruf explains it means more like just like schlepping, bring him, whatever it takes, bring him. So also garbe, so sure enough, Ada Daila went and did that, and so sure enough, Rabbi Baba Chana comes to the shiur. Also, he comes, Ashkechei de Kadorish ein machzir nes ha-shever. So he found that Rabbi Yehuda was teaching what it says in our Mishnah, that you're not allowed to set a broken bone on Shabbos. Omale, so Rabbi Baba Chana tells him, Hochi Omer, Rav Chana Bagadta, Omer Shmuel, you should know that Rav Chana Bagadta said in the name of Shmuel, Bagadta can have two meanings. Rashi explains in various places in Shas. It can mean that he was from Baghdad. It can also mean that he was a Baal Agadta. He was an expert in Agadta. Anyway, so he taught in the name of Shmuel, Halacha Machzirinas Hashever, that the halacha is you are allowed to set a broken bone on Shabbos. So Rabbi Yehuda says, look at that. Ha Chana Didan, consider, Rab Chana is one of ours because he's from Babel. Which is where we are now. V'ho Shmuel Didan, and Shmuel is also one of ours because he also lived in Babel. V'lo Shmieli, and all this time I haven't heard of this halacha, even though Rabbi Yehuda now himself was a star Talmud of Shmuel. So he's saying, all this time I never heard of this halacha until you had to come all the way from Eretz Yisrael and tell me, Amalei la bedina gravticha. So wasn't I justified in having Ada Daila come and force you to come? If it hadn't been for that, we never would have learned the proper halacha. So you see from that, Rabbona says that was the point. Why is Rabbi Yehuda so insistent on making sure that Rabbi Baba Chana comes to his shiur? Because he expects he's going to be able to learn from him some new thing. So in a way, it's almost the opposite of what we learned at the end yesterday, the story with Rabbi Elazar ben Aruch, where he thought he has nothing to learn from his chaverim. Here you have exactly the opposite. Rabbi Yehuda understood that he has what to learn from his chaverim, and therefore he wants him to come to his shiur. And sure enough, he learned something that he never would have known otherwise. Shoyo Perek Shloisha Ve'esrim, this Perek continues talking about various halachas of Shabbos, one of them being that halachas about what you're allowed to read on Shabbos. There's a concern. Yeah.
Sorry, I had to think of some. I don't know where you are.
We're on page Samachtes, beginning Shoyo Perek Shloisha Ve'esrim. So one thing the Mishnah mentions is that there are rules about reading certain kinds of writings or lists or whatever on Shabbos, because you may come to erase or rewrite things on the list. You may come to thinking about your business, etc. Whatever the case, so the Gemara mentions in this connection, Tana Rabbanan, Ksav HaMahalach Tachas HaTzura V'Tachas HaDiuk Nois. When you have writing, like a caption, under a picture or under an image, So Rashi describes, for example, you'll have pictures on a wall, you'll have pictures of murals or whatever on a wall. People will draw. Rashi describes strange animals or pictures of people or pictures of famous events. Like somebody might draw a picture representing, Rashi says, for example, this is the battle between David and Goliath. And whatever the case, underneath it, you'll have a caption or you'll have a little plaque over there that says what it is. So also the Kroisi b'Shabbos, you're not allowed to read those plaques or those captions on Shabbos, because again, that's going to lead a person to reading Shtorei Hedyotis, to reading mundane kind of reading material, which may then lead him to worry about his business affairs on Shabbos or even rewrite them or whatever. In fact, the image itself of a person, you're not even allowed to look at it on weekdays. Tosfos says that may only be if it's made as a Bodhisattva. So that would be a real issue, for example, when you visit museums and they have on display statues and paintings and whatnot of Avodah Zarah. There might be, based on this, there can be a real problem in halacha of looking at them. But Tosfos says, if we're talking about something that's not part of Avodah Zarah, then there's not necessarily a problem of looking at them. It would be midas chasidus not to, but you're not actually required al pi halacha to avoid looking at those. Anyway, Mishum Shenemar, Al Tifnu El Ha'elilim, because the Pasuk says, don't turn to the Elilim. Literally, Elilim means gods or deities, so don't turn to them. So the Gemara asks, my Talmudah, okay, but where are you getting from Al Tifnu El Ha'elilim? That it means not to look at those Dirknois. So Amar Rav Chanan, Al Tifnu El Midaitchem. It means don't turn to things that you made up from your own das. So thing Rashi explains, in other words, the word elilim can also be related to the word chalolim, as in hollows. So in the hollow of your heart, in your mind, you came up with these ideas, or other people came up with these ideas of these things to draw or sculpture or whatever. You're not allowed to be looking at them.
Really in the empty space of their heart.
It was really in the empty space of their heart. This is true, yeah. There's a different explanation. In fact, the Rambam says, from here we have, this is the Rambam list, this is one of the 613 mitzvahs. It was recently in Perek Echad in Hilchos Avodah Zarah, that not only, of course, you're not allowed to worship Avodah Zarah, but you're not even allowed to go and admire a statue of Avodah Zarah or comment on the beauty of it or whatever. All of that would be included. There is a different explanation of what the Gemara is saying over here. Al tifnu el midaitchem. There's an explanation that the Oruch brings, that you have to punctuate the words differently. The words should be punctuated. He says, Al tifanu keil midaitchem. Don't clear Hashem out of your mind. In other words, you should always be focused on Hashem. You shouldn't be focused on things, these duknois, these statues and sculptures and whatnot that are against Hashem, especially what Tosfos is saying, where they have to do with Avodah Zarah. So therefore, even on weekdays, a person has no business looking at them. The Gemara goes on to talk about this whole matter of Shtorei Hedyotis, and it turns out, actually, in Shulchan Aruch, there's quite a bit of halachos about that. Besides that we're saying that you're not allowed to read these plaques or captions or whatever on artwork on Shabbos, there's also, for example, it talks about in Shulchan Aruch, can you read a letter that somebody sent to you? On the one hand, it's Shtorei Hedyotis. On the other hand, there may be important information there that you need to know on Shabbos, so maybe there'd be a heter for it. It also talks about in Shulchan Aruch, for example, you're not supposed to be reading secular literature on Shabbos. Even on weekdays, it might not be so kosher to read. In fact, it's interesting, Shulchan Aruch, the Shulchan Aruch mentions, the Beis Yosef is the first one to bring it up, a sefer written in the Middle Ages by a Yid in Italy called Sefer Emmanuel. This Emmanuel was a Yid living in Italy, a Yid at Talmud Chacham, but he wrote one of the early pieces of Jewish secular literature. It's sort of like a combination of novels and poems and whatnot. It was a popular reading material among Jews. But the Beis Yosef says, actually, that you're not even supposed to be reading it on weekdays, much less on Shabbos, and the Alter Rebbe brings that. That would include also, he says, for example, reading secular histories and whatnot. And then the Alter Rebbe brings different opinions among Rishonim. What about, for example, reading scientific literature? Are you allowed to read science books on Shabbos? The Rambam says not. The Ramban and a number of other Rishonim say that those you could, because those are not similar to Shtorei Hedyotis. Well, there can be bathroom reading material, but here we're talking about Stam to read him on Shabbos. You have the Alter Rebbe mentions, again, taken from the earlier poskim, that, for example, you'd be allowed to read Jewish history books. You'd be allowed to read Sefer Yosifun. He gives us an example on Shabbos, which is an adaptation of Josephus's histories, because you can learn a lot of things of Yiras Shemayim from them, he says. So the point is that there is quite a bit of halacha as far as this detail of what you're allowed and not allowed to read on Shabbos, and for that matter, what you're allowed and not allowed to read even during the week. Yeah. Okay. Fine. further on, the Gemara talks about a halacha. So further on, like this, the way we get to this next piece is a little bit roundabout. The Mishnah mentions among the things you're not allowed to do on Shabbos, you're not allowed to make a girdle on who's going to get what portion of food. Because that's like doing business on Shabbos. However, you are in certain cases, you're allowed to. One of them is the Kohenim are allowed to make a girdle among themselves, who's going to get what part of what korban. Or not so much who's going to eat what part they have, or they're all a mitzvah to eat all of them, but who's going to be bringing what korban and what have you. Anyway, the word it uses for it is chaloshim, and then so the Gemara brings a halacha in that connection, and then the Gemara brings another a piece of agadta from the same amora, where also this piece of agadta is going to mention this word cholosh, which means to make gerdolos. So Amar Rabbi Yaakov bro de bas Yaakov, Rabbi Yaakov, the son of the daughter of Yaakov, said as follows. Now, why is he called in such a strange way rather than just being called by his name and his father's name? So Rashi elsewhere in Shas, where the same Rabbi Yaakov is brought, says his father was not an Erlich person. Therefore, we don't want to name the son after him. Therefore, instead, we name him after his grandfather. You have actually the halacha. There are such things. You have, for example, sometimes you have, unfortunately, you have a Jewish woman married to a goy, and they have a child, and then the child, of course, is a yid, but you can't call him up to the Torah with his father's name because his father is a goy. So then you call him up by his grandfather's name, by his mother's father's name. That would be one example of it. And there are other similar cases. Anyway, so Rabbi Yaakov says, Kol shechaveira nena shal yodei, anybody who, because of him, another person was punished by Hashem, ein machnisin oisibim chitzasi shal HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Hashem will not allow that person into his inner area, like to be as close as possible to Hashem in Gan Eden. He won't have that. So in other words, Shimon did something wrong. Reuven, for example, Davin, that Shimon should be punished because of him. Therefore, so Shimon gets punished, but Reuven also loses the right to be so close to Elikus as he otherwise would have been. So the Gemara asks Menolon, where do we know that from? So Ilema Meshum Dichtiv, are you going to say that we learn it as follows? The Pasuk says, you have the story at the end of Melachim, also in Divrei Hayamim, where Achav and Yehoshaphat are going to battle against Aram. So first, a bunch of false Nevi'im come and say that Achav will be victorious, but Yehoshaphat says none of them are true Nevi'im. Where's a true Navi? They bring Michoihu, and Michoihu says in Nevuah that Achav is going to be killed in the battle, and he describes the scene in the Beis Din Shamayla. He describes Hashem is sitting there, and the Malachim are standing all around him. By Yomer Hashem, mi yifata es Achav. Hashem says, who's going to trick Achav? Who's going to convince Achav? The Yal that he should go up to war. The Yipol beRomis Gilad, and he's going to fall in battle in Romis Gilad. So one Malach is saying this idea, another Malach is saying another idea. The Gemara explains in Sanhedrin that even though Achav was a terrible Rasha, but he had a lot of schusim to his credit. First of all, the Gemara says that he supported Talmid Chachamim. So the Gemara says, but he supported Talmid Chachamim very generously, and therefore half of his Averus were wiped out. So in effect, he's like half bound. So therefore, you have Mekatregim and you have defending Malachim and accusing Malachim on both sides. But Vayetze HaRuach, the spirit came out, and the Gemara is going to explain soon who that spirit was. Vayamad Lifnei Hashem, he stands before Hashem, Vayomer Ani Afatenu V'Gomer, he says, I will convince him. And Hashem says, really, how do you plan to? Vayomer, so he says, Eitze, I'll go out. Vayetze Ruach Sheker B'fi Kol Nevi'av, I will be a false spirit in the mouth of all of his Nevi'im. In other words, when the Pasuk is describing that you had those 400 false Nevi'im, they weren't actually, we're not talking about like they were Nevi'im of Baal or whatnot. The Pasuk describes, they're all saying, Hashem said that you'll be victorious in the battle. Yehoshaphat realizes there's something wrong over there, the Gemara explains in Sanhedrin, because real Nevi'im, everyone has their own style, and here all 400 of them are saying the same thing. But they weren't deliberately setting out to be false Nevi'im. Michoyah was describing that they were misled by this Ruach Sheker. So they genuinely thought that they had a Nevuah from Hashem, but in fact they did not. Vayomer, so Hashem says to that spirit, Tefata v'gam tochal, you will convince him and you'll be successful. Say, v'asechein, go out and do that. So now we explain in Sanhedrin, my Ruach, first of all, what spirit was this that offered to go and trip Achav and then send him off to where he's going to be killed. It refers to the spirit of Novos. So previously Achav had him killed, that trumped up charges brought against him and had him killed to take over his vineyard. So now he's out for revenge against Achav. So now he wants his revenge, and therefore he's offering to be the one through whom Ahav will be convinced to go to his doom. Who might say, so what does Hashem mean when he says go out? So it means Hashem is saying to him, go out of my mechitza. In other words, you're saying that you want to harm Ahav. Very well, you can do that, but because of that, you can't be in my mechitza, you can't be in my innermost presence anymore. So is that maybe a proof that, there you have an example, that Navos is causing that Ahav should be punished, and therefore Navos himself loses his closeness to Hashem. But not necessarily. You could say there was a different reason for it. The Pasuk says, someone who speaks falsehood will not stand in front of my presence, says Hashem. So therefore, because Rucho Shel Navos is saying that he's going to accomplish this through a lie, so Hashem says, fine, go ahead and do it, but you're also, once you're speaking lies, then you don't belong in Mechitzas Shel HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So no proof from there that the problem is that he's causing Ahav to be punished. If he had offered to do it in a way that doesn't involve lies, maybe Hashem wouldn't have told him to say. So Elamei Hafa, so maybe we can prove it from here. The Navi Chavakuk is talking about Nebuchadnezzar, how he's conquered and defeated all the nations, and as the Gemara is going to say, humiliated them tremendously. And a Pasuk says, so now one thing we know during Nebuchadnezzar's time is you had Sidkiyahu, the last king of Yehuda. Nebuchadnezzar had appointed him as king, and every so often he would have to go visit Nebuchadnezzar and show him respect and show him honor. A pasuk describes about what Nebuchadnezzar would do to the kings that he ruled over. Savata kolon mikavod, you've been filled up with embarrassment instead of the kavod that you should have, because the Gemara is going to explain soon that Nebuchadnezzar used to humiliate all the kings that he ruled over by forcing them to submit to Mishkav Zohar. So now the pasuk is saying that you, Nebuchadnezzar, instead are going to be full of embarrassment in the place of the kavod that you deserve. That you thought you deserved, now you're going to have the embarrassment that what you're doing is going to be publicly known and everybody's going to laugh at you. And the pasuk continues, say gam ata vehe orel gomer, you also drink vehe orel. Now the word vehe orel, the way it's written in the pasuk with a seire under the hay, means and become an orel. Where an oral is a shameful thing. The Gemara has an expression, the Mishnah has an expression in Dorim, Mu'usehi ha'orla, that the orla is a disgusting thing, and therefore the goyim are called arelim in the pasuk. So in other words, the pasuk on the surface is saying that you will also be, you will also drink, and you'll be embarrassed, and you'll be humiliated. However, the Gemara's understanding at first that gam ata refers to Sidkiyahu, savata kolon mikoved zen Nebuchadnezzar. So the first words of the pasuk are referring to Nebuchadnezzar. You used to enjoy so much kovet, and now you're going to be filled up with embarrassment when what you did becomes publicized. And shesei gam ata veheorol zet Sidkiyahu. And the next words in the pasuk, you also drink, Vehe Oro will refer to Tzidkiyahu. So either it means Vehe Oro, it means that you will be shamed, or it can mean that the Gemara is understanding the word as if it said Vehe Oro with a segel under the hay instead of a tseire, which means and the oral and the shameful one, Nebuchadnezzar. In other words, you and Nebuchadnezzar are both going to be full of embarrassment. So now the Gemara is assuming, in other words, that Tzidkiyahu, that the Gemara is going to explain soon the details that Nebuchadnezzar wanted to do to Tzidkiyahu what he was doing to all these other Goyish kings, and Hashem stood up for Tzidkiyahu's honor and prevented it from taking place in a way that publicly humiliated Nebuchadnezzar. So the Gemara is assuming, maybe we could say, that Tzidkiyahu caused it to happen. In other words, it wasn't, you could say that maybe he's willing to go along with it, knowing that Hashem will stick up for him, and therefore that Nebuchadnezzar will get embarrassed. So therefore, that means that he's causing that chaver, it's a little hard to say that Nebuchadnezzar should be called a chaver of Tzidkiyahu. One's a yid, a tzaddik, and the other's goyah rosha, but okay, they're both kings at least anyway. So you could say that maybe that's what the pasuk is implying, that Tzidkiyahu also deserves a share of the blame. However, the Gemara says no. First of all, the entire pasuk is talking about Nebuchadnezzar. The word gam ata does not refer to Tzidkiyahu. It's referring to Nebuchadnezzar. It's saying just like you humiliated all the other kings, the same way you are going to be humiliated yourself. And also, what could Tzidkiyahu have done? It's not that we were assuming that maybe he was willing to go along with it, at least for appearance's sake, knowing that Hashem will stick up for him. No, the Gemara is saying, as a matter of fact, he was a tzaddik. He never would have done that. And the fact that it calls him in the story, when the Gemara tells the story now, it calls him Oisei Tzaddik, implies that he wasn't even willing to go along with it at all. He was a total onus. So therefore, you can't say that that's considered Shechaveirin Nena Shal Yodeh. He had nothing to do with it, because not like he davened or did anything that should cause that, because that Hashem should punish Nebuchadnezzar. Hashem did it completely on his own. So therefore, you can't hold anything against Tzidkiyahu. And where do we see? So my havel in the mevedly, the amar of Yehuda, amar of b'shal shebikash oisei rosha lasis for oisei tzadik kach. When that Rosh Nebuchadnezzar wanted to do that to this tzadik, to use him from Mishkav Zohar, nimshecha orlosei gimel meis amah, his orla, Nebuchadnezzar's orla, was extended out 300 amas. As the Gemara is going to explain soon, is going to bring from a pasuk that hints at 300. Now, usually, by the way, 300 is often the Gemara uses 300 as a guzma, but here the Gemara just means like an indefinitely large number. But here the Gemara is going to bring in a gematria for it later from the pasuk. The word oral is gematria 300, implying therefore that it must mean literally 300. So why tackle 300? So Anath Yosef brings a point, and then the Maharal mentions it also, that Nebuchadnezzar is a continuator and a descendant or Gilgal of Nimrod. And Nimrod is gematria 300. So therefore, because of that, therefore was extended out 300 amos. There's other points about it also. Ben Yehoyada makes the point that 300 is also gematria Yetzer, referring to the Yetzer that Nebuchadnezzar was using. Incidentally, by the way, one of my boys once pointed out, if you look at the various descriptions of Nebuchadnezzar in the Psukim and in Maamarei Chazal, you come out that he was over on every single one of the Shevamisses B'nei Noach. Avim and Achai, the Gemara mentions that he did in Nedarim. You have over here Mishkav Zohar, which is one of the Arayas, that's also Tegoyim, and you have all the other ones as well. He covered all the bases, yeah. Anyway, so the point is, therefore, so we don't have any proof from this story with Tzidkiyahu and Nebuchadnezzar that when one person is punished because of another, then that other should be excluded from Hashem's mechitza, because Tzidkiyahu did not do anything or daven anything that Hashem should punish Nebuchadnezzar through him. Hashem did it all on his own. So Ela Mehacha, rather we can learn it from the following pasuk in Mishlei, Gam Anosh Latzadik Loitoiv, also to punish for a tzaddik is not good. So the simple meaning is it means exactly what it sounds like. It sounds like it means punishing a tzaddik is no good. Better to punish the rasha. But we're also understanding that it means that for a tzaddik to punish somebody is also no good. It's no good for the tzaddik. Exactly, right. So the Rif points out, because if it just meant to punish a tzaddik as a bad thing, then it should say gam anosh tzaddik. When it says gam anosh la tzaddik, then we can understand it means also punishment is no good for the tzaddik himself, that it takes him down a level, of ruchness. So if we say loy toiv, ein loy toiv, ela ra. The word loy toiv doesn't just mean no good. The opposite of toiv is ra. If it's not good, then it must be bad. And you have a pasuk that says, "Loi ki loi keo chofetz resha ata." Hashem, you do not desire evil. Loi, you do not desire wickedness. Loi yigurcha ra. Evil will not dwell with you, which means for tzaddik ata Hashem, you Hashem are a tzaddik, and therefore shaloi yogur b'mgurcha ra. No evil will be in your domain. So therefore, since in Hashem's mechitza, in other words, so since a tzaddik causing somebody else to get punished is loy toiv, which means ra, then therefore that pasuk shows that he's being excluded from Hashem's mechitza, from megurfa of Hashem. So there's our proof. Sanhedrin perichelik ma'amim akushrim. The Gemara in Sanhedrin has more that's connected with that. When we get to Sanhedrin, eventually, best Hashem, then we'll get to more that the Gemara talks about that. Anyway, so now the Gemara is going to go and darshan several psukim. There's a nevuah of Yeshayah's that talks about the downfall of Bavel. And the Gemara is going to go now and darshan several psukim. So the pasuk says, my dichtiv, Eich nafalta mishamayim halel, the Gomer. How is it that you have fallen from heaven, you halel, which is the name of a bright star, the Gomer cholash al goyim, you who were cholash on the nations. So this is the connection with the Mishnah over here. First of all, that again, we had a statement in Halacha from Rabbi Yaakov, brother of Bas Yaakov, and then therefore the Gemara brought another one, but also the fact that the Mishnah mentioned chaloshim being another name for goyrolas, and here we have the source of that in the Pasuk, where it says cholash al goyim, that Nebuchadnezzar was making a goyrol on the nations. So what does that mean? So Omer Rav Barav Huna Malamet Shoy Matul Pur Agdoy LeMalchus means that Nebuchadnezzar would make a lottery about the great people of the various kingdoms that he ruled over. Leida Ezeu Ben Yoyim Shom Mishkav Zachor, to know which one is going to be his partner that day for Mishkav Zachor. And then a couple of psukim later, it says, "Kol malchay goyim kulam shochvu b'chavet ish b'vesei." All the kings of the goyim, after Nebuchadnezzar has finally dropped dead, all of them lie in honor, each one in their house. So the simple meaning of the pasuk, Mefarshim explained, means that eventually when they all die, they get buried with full royal honors. Whereas Nebuchadnezzar, we know there's the whole story where he was buried, but then they dug him up and then dragged him all around the streets of Babel because people didn't believe that he was actually dead, etc., etc. But here the Gemara is darshaning that it means once he finally dropped dead, then all these kings are lying peacefully on their beds. Now they're able to rest from Mishkav Zachor, because until now they were lying in humiliation in Nebuchadnezzar's house, in Nebuchadnezzar's palace, and now they're finally able to go and lie in peace and sleep in peace in their houses. And further, Rabbi Yechanan says, "Kol yomav shal oisei rasha lo nimtzas choyk befek kol bria." Throughout the days of that rasha, throughout the whole rulership of that rasha, and Nebuchadnezzar ruled a long time, well over 40 years, you could never find laughter in anybody's mouth. Everybody had to be very serious and sad because it was a hard time. Shenemar, as the pasuk says, when he finally dies, nocha shokta kol ha'aretz, the whole earth is calm and is quiet. Potzhurina, they've broken out in song. Mikal dan hashtal, I have it in him, implying that all this time they're not able to sing, they're not able to be happy because they're too worried about Nebuchadnezzar being all of a sudden going and attacking. But Amr Ab Yitzchok, Amr Ab Yechanan, also, here's another thing from those psukim, also lamed beveser shal oisa rasha. You're not allowed to stand in the place of the palace of that rasha. Shenema, because the pasuk says Yeshaya goes on to describe by Nebuah how the entire city of Babel is going to be destroyed and be just a heap of ruins, which it is. Adayim Azeh was never rebuilt after Babel was conquered by the Persians. The city of Babel was destroyed and it was never rebuilt. And by the way, you have to realize I've read about this. The goyim in that part of the world, the Babylon themselves, as well as the Assyrians and various other peoples in that area, they considered Babel their great holy city, going all the way back to the time of Migdal Babel. Lahavdil was to them what Yerushalayim is to us. So the fact that it was destroyed and never rebuilt was a tremendous blow to their whole belief system. Anyway, so you're not allowed to stand in his palace. Shenemo Seirim Yirachdu Sham. The pasuk says that Seirim, which means Shadim, will dance over there. Now, what happens? We find all over Shas that Shadim usually stay away from people. So if a person goes and stands in the place of that palace, then he's causing the Shadim to run away. Therefore, he's being Mevatel, Hashem's Gzeira, that the place should be a den of Shadim. Marashah points out another practical point. The Shadim could attack him. So therefore, that's another reason you shouldn't go there, because of the danger. Amr of Yehuda Amr Rav. So now getting back to what we were saying before about Sidkiyo, Rav Yehuda says in the name of Rav, B'shar Shabikash Oisei Rosha Lassus Lo Oisei Tzadik Kach. When that Rosha, Nebuchadnezzar, wanted to do that to Tzidkiyahu, what he was doing to all the other Goyish kings, Nimshacha Erlose Shlosh Meis Amma, his Erla was extended 300 Amas, V'hoise Machazeres Al Kol HaMasiba Kula, and it was circling around the entire party, where everybody, all the kings, Rashi describes, are all reclining and sitting by the table in front of him, and all of a sudden they see this thing snaking around them, and it was a tremendous embarrassment for Nebuchadnezzar. Shenemar, as we have the pasuk from Chavakum that we quoted before, Savata Kolon recovered. You've been filled up with embarrassment instead of the honor that you had until now. Shasei Gam Ata Vehe Oro. You also will drink and become repulsive. Because again, we said the word oral means something embarrassing and then repulsive. oral b'gematria shloish meis habu. The word oral is gematria 300. So therefore, that shows that his oral was extended out 300 amos. So everybody realized what he was trying to do. Sitkiyahu, and it became a tremendous embarrassment for him. V'amar of Yehuda Amar Rab b'shash sheyarat oisei rosh al gehenim. Now, when that Rosh and Nebuchadnezzar went down to Gehenna, here's another passage. Here's more psukim from that section of the Gemara is going to daushin. Roshu ko yode Gehenna. All the people, all the goyim, and all the kings who had previously gone down to Gehenna were all nervous. Omru, they were saying, Shema limshal aleinu hu ba. Did he maybe come to rule over us? Oy lecholish or lecholis kemoisim hu ba. Or is he maybe coming? He's going to be sick and weak like the rest of us. So they're worried. In other words, even Yaakov points out, I mean, they're already in Gehenna. What do they have to worry about? Still, they'd rather be judged and punished in Gehenna by Hashem himself rather than having to be ruled over by a tyrant like in Nebuchadnezzar. So therefore, they're nervous. Shenema, as the pasuk says, Gam ata chuleinu chuleisa kamoinu eleinu nimsholta. You also have become sick like us. You have become nimsholta to us. Nimsholta, Rashi says, Meloshin memshala. So it means they're asking, what is it? Is it Gam ata chuleisa kamoinu? Are you also sick and weak like the rest of us, consigned to Gehenna, and you're no greater than us? Or eleinu nimsholta, or have you come to us in order to rule over us? Yotza Basko Omra, so a Basko came out and announced, this next pasuk is going to be from a different Nevuah, from Yechezkel, Mimina Omta, Hashem says, who do you think you're better than? Redoba Hoshkvar Sarelim, go down and lie together with the other Arelim, with the other repulsive people. Marsha points out, now this pasuk is actually not only it's from a different Navi. Till now we've been doushening from Chavakuk and from Yirmiya. All of a sudden now we're bringing in a pasuk from Yechezkel, but also the context of that pasuk, Mimina Omta, is part of a Nebuah against Mitzrayim. So how are we bringing it over here about Nebuchadnezzar? So Marsha explains, the like this, you have the psuk before that. The pasuk says Hashem tells Yechezkel, you're going to make a whole lament, a whole kina, a whole wailing over what's going to happen to Mitzrayim, that all of them are going to be thrown down into Gehenna. So then, when it says Mimina Omta Radova Hoshkva, it means we're talking about Bavel. You think that you're so important that you should be better off than the Mitzrayim? No, you're going to be consigned to the same pit of Gehenna as them. What? Okay. So that's why the Gemara is bringing the pasuk. In other words, that the Navi is saying, I'm in context, I'm talking about Mitzrayim, but you Nebuchadnezzar, even though you're the king of the great superpower of the time, and you even conquered Mitzrayim, don't think you're going to be any better than them as far as what's going to happen to you in Gehenna. Another pasuk from Yeshaya, the Gemara Daushans, the pasuk says the beginning of Yeshaya's Nevuah. He says, "Eich shavas noiges shav samadheva." How is it, this is people are going to say, when Nebuchadnezzar finally dies in Bechlal, when Malchus Bavel is defeated, how is it that how has the Noigis, the oppressor, the one like you have by Yisimu all over, like you have in the Pasuk by the Jewish people in Mitzrayim, that were Noigsim, by Noigsim Otsim Lamer, so Noigis is people who pressure people to do work, so how is it that the Noigis has disappeared? Shobsa Madheva, the Madheva has ceased. So what is Madheva? Amr of Yehuda and Mephoshim on the pasuk explained that the word dahab is Aramaic for gold, so it means like the gilded nation, like a nation that's important, like gold, and that's plated and bedecked with gold. But here the Gemara is doushing different. Amr of Yehuda, Amr Rab, Shavsa Umazois, Shomra Medoid Vahavi. This nation, the Bavliim, who used to tell people, measure out money and gold dinner and bring it as tribute, now they've ceased to exist. And now we don't have to pay them tribute anymore, and therefore everybody's happy about that. The Ikadamri, others say that the word Madheva means, so Madheva will be short for Medoid Vahave. The Ikadamri, Shamra, Ma'oid, Ma'oid, Havi, Beloy Mida. A different explanation is Madheva means that they're saying, Ma'oid, Ma'oid, very much, bring without even a measure. So also Madheva then would be Meloshin, Ma'oid, Havi. Marsha explains that the two different opinions reflect like this. The first one is the first opinion is saying that we don't expect you to count out the individual coins. We want such a large tribute that counting out all the coins would be too much of a bother. We just but measure out, like, for example, X number of boxes of coins, let's say. The second one says, never mind even that. They don't even want X number of boxes without limit. Whatever you got, you got to give us. So therefore, now everybody's going to be happy that kind of thing is gone. Ben Yehoyada brings a different explanation, very interesting. The Medrash tells that when Nebuzaradan, Nebuchadnezzar's general, came to conquer Yerushalayim, he saw the walls of Yerushalayim are very strong and impregnable. So after a while, he's trying to fight against the city with all his various siege weapons, and nothing's happening. He's ready to give up. But Hashem had decided that the Beis Mikdash is going to be destroyed because of the Jewish people's avarice. So therefore, one day, he measured the wall and he saw that it's sinking into the ground. And the next day, a little more, and the next day, a little more, until it's low enough that he and his soldiers are able to scale it and get into the city. So it means medoyed v'hove. So therefore, that's another meaning of medoyed v'hove. It means that Hashem tells Nebuzaradan, and Nebuchadnezzar's general, measure the walls, and eventually you'll be able to bring your army into Yerushalayim, because eventually the walls will sink far enough that you'll be able to. Getting back to Nebuchadnezzar, the Gemara says, here now we have, so you have a story in Sefer Daniel, where Nebuchadnezzar had a dream. He saw this gigantic tree, which gets chopped down, and Malach comes and says, chop it down and tie and then chain it up with iron and copper chains and so on and so forth, a whole long thing. And when Daniel explains to him that the meaning of the dream is that you, Nebuchadnezzar, are going to go crazy for a period of years. You're too proud of yourself. You think that you run the world. You don't realize that Hashem does. You're going to go crazy. You're going to live among the animals for several years until you wise up and realize that Hashem runs the world. So Nebuchadnezzar describes the whole story there in first person, and it describes he wrote an open letter to his entire kingdom telling the story, and he finishes off that after I was restored to my throne, he says, Urvu yatiro husafasli, greater majesty was added to me. So what does that mean? Amar of Yehuda, Amar of Yemi Ba'aba, Malamed Shirochav al Ari Zohar. This teaches us that Nebuchadnezzar was riding on a male lion, where normally nobody would be able to tame a lion to that extent, but Nebuchadnezzar had that ability, the kosher tanin biroshay, and he tied a snake or a viper or whatever, some kind of dangerous snake, on its head. So Rashi explains, he used the snake as like reins to control the movements of the lion. Marasha says it can also mean that he used the snake as on his own head. He made it like a crown for himself. Either way, Marasha explains the vort is that Nebuchadnezzar's mazel is the lion. We find that he's called the lion in the Psukim, and he came to destroy the Beis Mikdash in the month of Av, whose mazel is the lion. You have a whole medrash that says that the lion came in the lion month and destroyed the lion-like Beis Mikdash. Al-Manas, that Hashem, who's also compared to a lion in the Psukim, will come and rebuild the lion-like Beis Mikdash in the lion month of Av, etc. Anyway, the point is that therefore, so Nebuchadnezzar's mazel was the lion, so that represents that. And the snake represents the Nochash HaKadmoni, which is where he got his power from. In particular, Marasha said the Nochash HaKadmoni is the power of Esav. So Nebuchadnezzar destroyed the first Beis Mikdash. Esav's descendants destroyed the second one. Therefore, that's indicated by the fact that Nebuchadnezzar had the ability to control the lions and the snakes. Anaf Yosef brings another point over here that also he conquered the kingdom of Yehuda, who's compared to a lion, Gur Ari Yehuda, and he conquered Mitzrayim, the other power of that time, which is compared to a snake in Psukim. So therefore, in token of that, he was able to control, he was able to use a lion and a snake to ride around on. Anyway, this fulfills what the Navi, what Yirmiyah had said about him, that Hashem says, I've also given him the wild animals of the field to serve him. So how are they serving him? Because, for example, he's able to take these wild, dangerous animals and ride on them and use them for his personal needs like that.
Yeah.
Yom Yom Mashiach HaGola, Yudhes 7. We have the famous thing that it says Mashiach ba behesach adas. So what does that mean? We're constantly thinking and we're talking about and we're using das, and das after all means to think and to connect your mind very strongly with concept of Mashiach Geula, and we're constantly focusing on the fact that to recognize, as the Rebbe was talking about all the time in Sichas, to realize that we're already at the threshold of Yemos Mashiach in Ezeba and Kol Kol Akitzin, and we've all done Tshuva and accomplished all the Avodah. So how does that fit with the idea of Mashiach ba behesach adas? If on the face of it, that means that we shouldn't be thinking about it, we should distract ourselves from it. So no, rather, Hesach HaDas means to be higher than Das. So meaning, in other words, you get all of this idea of Yemos HaMashiach and everything that's entailed in it into your Das, and you think about it and contemplate it into deeply, and then it gets to the point where it's higher than Das even, and therefore that's what it means, Mashiach Baba Hesach HaDas. halacha. We're long past the point of Hes Hadas too, yeah. Halacha. We talked yesterday about the idea that if a person, that if people have decided on a purchase, if it's been mutually decided on a purchase, and then one of them wants to take it back, then he gets a curse of Misha Pora and Basedin. So now, even if you haven't gotten to that point, you haven't given money, or you haven't made a mark on it or whatever, and no Kenyan is done, but once they agree on a price, neither one of them should be changing his mind. And if he does, he's called Mechusre Amona, and the Chachamim are not happy with such a person. There's no Misha Para, but there's still, the Chachamim are not pleased with such a person, because a Yid should stick to his word. As the Pasuk says, that the Jewish people don't, the remnant of the Jewish people, Lo Yasu Avla, they won't do falsehood, but Lo Yadabru Chazav, and they won't speak lies. A Yoreh Shemayim would go even further and follow even what he thought. But if he thought, the Gemara tells us at the end of Makos, a story involving Rav Safra with that, where if he decided mentally that he's going to sell at a certain price, then he should only take that price. And the same thing, if the buyer has decided on a certain price, he also shouldn't change his mind. And the same thing, other things, a person should follow what he thought if he decided to do something good, and he's able to do it. On the other hand, when it comes to a person's own needs and there's no trace of a mitzvah in it, then even if a person said that he's going to do it, he's not obligated to do it. Only when it comes to Avos Yisrael for a fellow Yid does a person have to follow his machshavas. Okay.